We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is episode number 72, and it's not going to be a pretty episode because the Yankees have been playing like crap. How you doing, Scott?
This will probably be the best thing you listen to or watch in terms of the New York Yankees all week from this previous week. So just be happy to hear our voices and not hear all the play-by-play guys or anybody you're listening to the game, because all they do is have bad news for us because they suck. They're playing so terribly. So we are the best thing for you right now. This is your medicine. This is our medicine. This is like our therapy.
I was thinking about it because the Yankees have not been totally dead out of the playoff race pretty much since I've been starting to watch baseball, which was in the mid to early 90s. They've always been in the race. What happens if it's like June 1st and they're 20 games out of first place or something like that? I mean, obviously we're still going to watch every game or try to, and we're going to still do this podcast, but I've never experienced that before and I'm getting a little worried it might actually happen.
Yeah, I don't know. This is all uncharted territory. I mean, I was too young in the late 80s to really have these emotions. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm like the eternal optimist, and I'm really looking for
things. You got to dig deep today.
I'm trying to be Kenny Singleton, man, and like look for positive ways to talk about things. And
look out.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. There was a stat from 2007 that I'm kind of leaning on right now about how the Yankees felt. This was the furthest they've been under 500 since 2007, I think it was. And they won 94 games that year. And so
I love stats like that, though.
There is
2007, as if that's relevant. There's one guy from that team that's still on the team today.
No, the whole point of that stat is that it's possible. That's the whole point of that stat. That's it.
Right.
It has nothing to do with this team, this player, these players, or anything. It just has to do with the fact that there's a possible positive outcome. Say that five times.
Nothing's impossible. Got it.
Yes.
So number 72, Slade Heathcott, and I'm going with him because he was up on the team last year, had that big home run in Tampa, kind of gave the Yankees a spark towards the end of the season last year. I think we both liked Heathcott and the energy he brought to the team, that's not even a word. But a little quick update on Heathcott's season, how it's going so far. He was placed on the 7-day disabled list on April 21st, but he is back now, so I think all is good with him. He's not having a great year with Scranton, but you know, he could provide the Yankees some outfield depth if they needed it at some point this season. So he wore number 72, and I was looking through Baseball Reference has every player in Major League Baseball that's ever worn every number, and there's not a lot of number 72s. So I got a little trivia question for you. Not that I expect you to get it, but I wanted to put it out there.
Was this what you put in the show notes that I wasn't allowed to look at?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
So who is the best player in Major League history to wear number 72? And I'm going to give you a hint that he is a Hall of Famer.
That narrows it down. I have no idea. I don't
Hall
even know
famer,
where to start.
And he played for the Red Sox at one point in his career.
And he played for the Red Sox at one point in his career. Dude, I have no clue. I don't even know where to go start on this.
Carlton Fisk wore number 72 for the White Sox, and he played for the White Sox for like 12 years.
He played for the White Sox. That's how I knew him.
Yeah, and it was funny because it's the complete. He went the complete opposite: Red Sox to White Sox, number 27 to number 72. So he just totally went opposite on us. But you don't see a guy like Carlton Fisk wearing number 72 often. Usually, once the guys come up and have a number in the 60s or the 70s, they quickly change it, which is why I think it's kind of cool that a guy like Betances is sticking with 68, because, you know, he's obviously a great player, and to see a number like that on somebody is kind of cool. So before we get into everything with the Yankees, I think you had a couple updates on our podcast and where it's available.
Yeah, really just the one update. We were talking about Google Play Store a few weeks ago or last week. I don't remember when we first mentioned it, that we were going to be – that Google was opening up the Play Store to podcasts. And we had been on their – you know, our feed was accepted to them a long, long time ago. So we are now in there. And I know we got a mailbag about that, just about the fact that we talked about that and that they're – He said that there were other podcast apps available for Android. So we do appreciate you you checking that out. But and also now this is native to the Android phone. So check it out. If you're on Android, if you're on Android and listening to us, you should be able to get it through your phone. We've tested it a couple times. It looks like it's all there. So if you have any problems with that, let us know, though, so we can dive into it. But yeah, that's it. We're just, you know, we're slowly taking over the podcast networks. Slowly.
Slowly getting into all the podcast networks. It's great, though. I mean, the more places we are, the better. If you search in iTunes for Yankees under podcasts, we're going to show up on that first page. So it's pretty good. Hopefully we can bump out a couple of those podcasts that are 1, 2, 3, and we can move up the ranks there.
Yeah, who doesn't want the fan podcast to be number one? I mean, that's what we're all rooting for, aren't we?
Yeah, you can get that regular Clubhouse stuff anywhere. You can't get this anywhere, though.
That's true. So on that note, why don't you hook us up with a 5-star review? It helps us get to the top of iTunes.
That's a segue. That's a professional segue right there.
You're welcome.
So the Yankees' record is now 8-14, which is the fifth worst record in Major League Baseball.
Good God.
And it could be worse. They had a couple rainouts, so luckily they're only 8-14. 74 runs scored, though, on the season is last in Major League Baseball. And to be last in baseball when the Atlanta Braves and that current roster is playing in baseball, who has 5 total home runs on the season, and they have more runs scored than you?
And they bat a pitcher?
Yeah. And they bat a pitcher? You have got to look yourself in the mirror and you just have to be so ashamed of yourself. I don't know how you can put on a major league uniform and go out there every day with that kind of stat.
It's a really terrible stat. The fact that we are the Bronx Bombers are last in runs scored in Major League Baseball with the names that you see on this roster, it's embarrassing. There's no excuse for that. These guys have literally no excuse for the lack of production. It's awful. It's just been so long too. You know what's so frustrating is that when you're watching these games, like I still have that same feeling. It's like it never left me from the end of last year. Like I know we're going in. I know our pitchers have to be perfect on every single game because we're going to maybe score 1 or 2 runs.
Yeah.
And if there's any kind of deficit past that, we're done. It's so frustrating to watch, to know that. And it's just stayed true for the past few weeks. It's been terrible. Ever since that outburst in Detroit.
Yep.
It's like we Johan Santana ourselves. Yeah.
So they scored a bunch of runs in Detroit. And if you remember our first podcast after the season started, the Yankees were number one in runs scored after the first week in the season. And since those games in Detroit, they've only scored more than 4 runs in one game.
That's bad.
That was 3 weeks ago. It's 2 runs, 1 run, 0-0, 1-2. It's so pathetic and anemic. I don't even have words for it. And the starters aren't helping either because their ERA as a collective staff is 4.96 and their record overall is 4-10, 26th in Major League Baseball. They're not going deep into games, which we knew was going to happen. They have the third fewest innings pitched as a staff in Major League Baseball. So you couple 5 innings and, you know, 3 runs given up by your starters with 1 run on offense, you're going to lose a ton of games.
And there are so many domino effects with what we're talking about here, because first of all, let's talk about the lack of run production. Well, the lack of run production means your starters have to be perfect. I mean, they have to literally give up 0 runs, 1 run, 2 runs tops. So you got guys pressing, you got guys doing things probably out of their ordinary. They don't have as much of a comfort zone as they normally would. And that can absolutely change the mindset of a pitcher. There's no doubt about it. I'm not saying that's all of it, but that's definitely something to consider. The other thing is that we're already seeing, I believe we're already seeing, it's May 1st, and we're already seeing a kind of tired bullpen. We got some of these guys who've been pitching a ton early in the season. And for guys that throw 1 inning, 2 innings, that's not a great thing. Because if they're getting tired now, and these guys are getting overworked this early in the season, can you imagine what's going to happen in August and September?
It might not even matter by then.
It's crazy, but they are. I mean, it's out of necessity because the starters aren't going deep.
12 outs out of your bullpen every night is not sustainable, not even for a month, never mind a whole season. You can't win a division that way. It is literally impossible because there's too much that can go wrong in that number of innings out of your bullpen every night. And the Yankees' bullpen is great. They've got a lot of guys. Betances, Miller are fantastic, 2 of the best in the league. But like we saw over the weekend in Fenway, they can't be perfect every night. You can't expect them to be perfect every night. And when your starter is getting pulled after 5 1/3 inning, again, night after night, you're gonna give up runs. It's just how baseball goes. That's baseball, Susan.
Yeah, it's disconcerting. Something very, very drastic has to change, and it's got to happen very soon. I mean, with Baltimore coming up, this is a huge series.
Sox series wasn't huge.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying that the fact that the way that the Red Sox series has gone makes the Baltimore series even more important, because we just, you know, we're burying ourselves this early, and it's not a good situation when you're not putting up runs. And these guys have to wake up at some point, and I just pray it's very soon, very soon.
Yeah, because we don't know what's going on Sunday night. We're recording right before the game starts. I know it's raining in Boston, so I think they're going to get the game in, but it might be a long night. So this is I was praying for a rainout all day, because sometimes a rainout can be a struggling team's best friend. But as you said earlier, though, 2007 was the last time the Yankees have been this many games under 500. And this is the most games they've ever been under 500 under Joe Girardi. And that includes some pretty awful teams. If you go and look at that 2013 roster with Andrew Jones and Travis Hafner and Vernon Wells and Kevin Youkilis in the starting lineup, and that team wasn't even this many games under 500. How is this team so bad? They should not be this bad.
It's everybody is ice cold at the same time. That's another reason why I'm thinking like this cannot be sustainable. They're not sustainably this bad. They're just not. You look at the guys on that roster, they're not this bad. So I don't know why this is happening. And I'm looking at our show notes at the number you put in there, the fact that they were 25-31 in 2007. This is a good omen, in my opinion, okay? On that day, this is when they turned it around and they won 94 games. Well, that was my birthday, June 5th. So, you know.
So maybe right the Yankees there are going to struggle until June 5th. And then
that's something that's saying to me that they're going to turn it around.
That 07 team.
So that's what's going to happen. They're going to turn it around.
From June 5th on, that 07 team was fantastic. They won at like a 700 clip after that. Obviously, to get to 94 games, that was one of my favorite Yankee teams. And if it weren't for the stupid bugs in Cleveland, I think the Yankees could have actually had a chance to beat the Red Sox in the ALCS that year. And it wouldn't have been Cleveland. But, all right. I know if you've been following me on Twitter, you know Chase Headley. I just can't stand him. I've been getting hashtag Chase Headley sucks, trying to get that trending. He needs to be benched. I wrote an angry blog on Friday night after the game, after he made another error and left two more guys on base and grounded into a double play. But there is really no excuse for Girardi to keep running this guy out in the starting lineup. He has now had 60 at-bats. He has a 150 batting average and a 150 slugging percentage. That means he's only gotten singles. He has zero extra base hits, and it's now May 1st.
Yeah, he's trying to out Stephen Drew. It's pretty bad. This is a pretty awful situation with this guy.
We passed Stephen Drew phase a long time ago. Stephen Drew had home runs and didn't make 20 errors. He is way worse than Stephen Drew was last year, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the numbers are extremely telling. There are no numbers. There are no numbers. He's batting 150 with zero extra base hits and 60 at bats. That's inexcusable. That's not Major League Baseball production. That's not a major baseball player at this point. He does. He needs to be sit. Something needs to change. And there's no reason Girardi should stick with him through this. I mean, there's no reason any manager should. It's a situation that needs to be remedied by a benching. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Chase Headley has 10 years with the Yankees of history where, oh, we know he's going to come out of it. He's our guy. This guy is somebody you traded for from San Diego who had one monster season in San Diego, turned down a mega contract, had a good second half for the Yankees in 2014, but other than that has been pretty terrible. What do you owe Chase Headley other than $13 million? Which, I'm sorry, $13 million, we said this before, they've eaten a lot worse contracts than $13 million a year than Chase Headley's. They can do it with this one.
I mean, and look what teams are doing. I mean, look what the Red Sox did, our opponent this weekend. They sat Pablo Sandoval, their big, big free agent signing, for a kid, Travis Shaw, because he beat him out because he wasn't playing well. it's a baseball decision. A baseball decision, and this needs to be a baseball decision. Sit the guy. He's not the best player on the team. He's not the best third baseman on the team. He's not the there's a guy who's been on three teams in the past, you know, 12 months that's better than him. That's significantly better than him right now at the plate. And it's just it has to change. I mean, you need to make a baseball decision at some point in the very near future. This guy cannot be playing baseball anymore on the Yankees. It just can't happen.
Yeah,
it's killing us.
At least Torreyes, when he gets up to bat, he hits the ball hard. He's not an automatic out, and he plays a solid third base. I'm not saying he's going to be great, but at the very least, give him a week. Give Headley a week off. You have to. For the very least, to just give him a mental break and see what happens. If they want to revisit him as the starting third baseman in a week or 10 days and see what they have, fine. I'm okay with that. But you can't keep sending him out there every night and expect that things are going to change, because they're not changing. And I think we have enough sample size now to know he sucks.
What's the collective batting average of the Atlanta Braves pitchers in the nine hole?
Great question.
Is it better than 150? Because maybe I take my comment back. Maybe it's a good thing to have the pitcher batting in the nine hole. CeCe could bat 150 and with some pop.
Hell yeah, he could.
Yeah, I have confidence in that. So you know Evaldi could hit.
Can he?
Oh yeah, no doubt. He can do anything
he wants.
We're
going to get to Evaldi in a second.
He can do anything he wants to.
A-Rod had a couple days off after that oblique strain, and he's actually looked pretty good since he came back. The rest did him good, so maybe the rest will do Chase Headley good. The difference between, I know last week you and I said both A-Rod and Headley are killing this team right now, and I said at least A-Rod hits the ball hard. Yeah, he's batting 160 or whatever it is, but he shows flashes of hitting a home run or an extra base hit. The ball comes off Chase Headley's bat, and I think we said this last week, decelerates. It looks like he is swinging all upper body, all arms. Such a terrible swing. I have no confidence he's ever going to drive the ball. At least A-Rod is driving the ball, and he hit a moon ball on Friday in Fenway. So I think the rest did him some good. I know he's back in the three hole on Sunday night against the lefty Price. So maybe we're seeing flashes of A-Rod starting to turn it around. And if you can get somebody going in this lineup, they just need one guy to carry the team for a few games, and maybe you can get some momentum. Who knows? Maybe it'll be A-Rod.
Yeah, the problem is that when A-Rod does show his flashes, it's with nobody on base. Oh. And then we have a solo shot, and that's the production. So to me, it has to be more than one guy. And A-Rod's not going to be that guy. I don't know. I'm not. I know you're more.
Why?
You're more optimistic on A-Rod.
Why couldn't?
Because I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he's going to put big stretches of hitting the ball well this year. I don't know.
Who do you think will have a better chance at doing that?
I think a lot of those other guys should be doing it. I'm not sure.
But they're not.
I think Castro needs to be up at the top of the lineup. At the top, he absolutely needs to be up there. And we've seen improvement from Ellsbury. Look, I can't say anything because Gardner's been hitting the ball well, but it hasn't resulted in any production. It's been zero production.
Anytime they get guys on base, Ellsbury and Gardner led off the game Friday night with two singles, and then Beltran immediately grounded into a double play.
I know. It's frustrating as hell. That's the whole point. So you get like one guy that's trying to carry a roster, and you're having all these other people screw it up. So I don't know. Everybody's cold at one time, so maybe everybody can get hot at one time. Isn't that baseball, Susan? Isn't that baseball?
That's not Yankees baseball. Solo home runs and five-inning starts is Yankees baseball this year.
That double play pissed me off. I was so angry.
It set the whole tone for the series.
Yeah, it was awful.
All right, before we get into the game breakdowns, Girardi made some comments about the shifts that I want to talk about, and it kind of pissed me off. I don't know how this came up, but there was a story, I think, on ESPN, and Girardi was quoted. He said, if I was commissioner, I would ban the shift. And I'm thinking there, I'm saying, the Yankees shift so much, more than most teams in baseball. They're not the most, but they're in the top, at least top 10 of how many times they shift per game. And he's saying he wants to ban them. He said it's like cheating, that the defense wasn't meant to be played that way. Whether you agree with that or not, I mean, if you're going to say, oh, we think we see the benefit in shifting, but I would ban it, it kind of seems hypocritical and just one of those classic Girardi statements.
See, I'm going to actually disagree with you because you know, I think Girardi was talking about the rule itself, the rule that's in place, if it should be in place or if it shouldn't be in place. And he's not a fan of the rule, the fact that, or it's not even a rule, the fact that they can just shift. And by him saying it, he would, if he were commissioner, he would get rid of the shift, has nothing to do with what he does on the field, because it is an allowable play at this point, and it does help because the statistics show that. So it would be ridiculous for it to be allowed and then for him not to use it based on his numbers or his binder. So
you would think
I don't think it has any indication of him what he should and shouldn't do on the field while it's available to him. So.
Okay, so I didn't look at it from that angle, so I guess I understand that. But yeah, I mean, he is numbers driven, so he's going to use the analytics to make a shift
if it's available. Right.
Do you think it's cheating, like he said?
I mean, I don't think it's cheating. I don't like it personally. You know, I tend to be more of a baseball purist, if that even exists anymore. But I like the way the game is designed to be played, with a third baseman, you know, a shortstop and a second baseman all in their natural positions. I think that, yes, it makes the offense a lot less productive for having these shifts. And to me, baseball does need more offense. It's like when hockey, you know, went down to the when they started doing 4-on-4s. I mean, it just makes it more exciting. I'm actually surprised that baseball does allow that for that reason, because, you know, if you're baseball, obviously you want more offense, and all that does is take away offense. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got rid of it at some point.
Yeah, it takes away a single here or there.
I mean, it does.
Also, it also gives singles.
Occasionally. I think it definitely takes away more than it gives.
Sure. Yeah. But the argument is always just, if you don't want them to shift on you, go the other way. And these hitters can't do it. So
you're right. It's because they're not brought up the same way. Guys can't hit, you know, all around the field. Not as many guys anymore. There's so many guys now that are just, you know, that are so specialized in one way of hitting, and they can't adapt. I mean, we saw with Didi trying to bunt the other week. It was ridiculous. So I don't know.
All right. Well, the lone highlight of this episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show is going to happen right now. And that was Eovaldi's almost no-hitter in Texas.
Nasty Nate!
Nasty Nate did show up, and for a second there, Scott was unbearable on Twitter. But you know what? I even had to give him credit, because Eovaldi, that was the best start I've ever seen him have. His splitter and slider curve, he was throwing like a slurve curveball. It was nasty. His splitter was down, which is what we've been saying time after time. That makes his 97-98 mile-an-hour fastball actually effective when he gets his splitter and curveball down. So it was great to see. And that's a tough lineup in Texas, especially at home in Texas. That's a real tough lineup. So great start by Eovaldi. He didn't get the no-hitter, but, you know, I wasn't expecting him to get the no-hitter. It was what the Yankees needed at that time. They needed a starter to go deep into a game and have a dominant performance, and they got it. And, you know, it's that kind of potential out of Eovaldi that you and I talk about all the time. That frustrates me. It gets you excited, but it frustrates me.
You know, this is the one where I really did think he was going to get up for this game, because he's a Texas guy. He went back to Texas, so he had a lot of things, I think, in play, more than just this game. I'm sure he had family and friends watching or there or whatever, and he wanted to show his stuff on that stage. So yeah, you know, it was exciting for me to watch, because, like, you're right that this is the type of potential stuff that he has, and I think I really do believe that. You know, he's just going to continue to get better as he gets more comfortable with his off-speed stuff. A lot of his off-speed stuff is new, you know, newer from last year. I mean, literally, he started throwing that splitter in the second half of last year. So this is a brand new pitch that he really does have to master. And, you know, all we need strides from him, and positive strides, obviously, and getting that stuff down. And like you said, it's going to make that 97-mile-an-hour fastball that much more effective, because it does not have a ton of movement by itself. He needs supportive pitches. And we saw what happened against a good lineup. And it was awesome to see. It really was. And he even was efficient. He was efficient. He was getting ground balls. He was getting out of innings. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was bizarro Eovaldi.
No, it was Scott Rinen's blueprint of what Eovaldi needs to do. Should be his freaking pitching coach.
I don't know if you were watching the game on ESPN. I was, because my MLB TV, I think most people's does, gets, you know, 30 seconds to 60 seconds behind. So if the game is on national TV, I like to watch it so I'm not delayed on Twitter. But Dallas Braden was calling that game, and he was calling him Eovaldi.
Yeah. I don't know. I hate Dallas Braden, so.
He was pronouncing the O. It pissed me
off. Was saying
so
that, he wasn't, like, just calling him Eovaldi. He was just calling him. Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah, real annoying. It's like you'd think one of the producers over at ESPN would be like, hey, man, It's actually Eovaldi, and you sound like a jackass.
Look at Dallas Braden. He looks like a jackass. The guy's got red, curly, like, he's got, like, no hair on the top, and he's got, like, a perm on the back.
Yeah, he's got a cul-de-sac perm. You don't see that every day.
It's very odd. And he's a little crybaby. The whole A-Rod situation totally turned me off that guy.
Yeah, but Eovaldi was great. Ellsbury also hit a home run in this game. And I want to pose the question. I'm not suggesting anything. But where has Ellsbury's power gone? He hit 32 home runs in 2011, which is an outlier. That looks suspicious as hell. But hey, 32 home runs, great season. It probably earned him the $153 million contract that he got a couple seasons
ago. It did.
Later. Yeah.
It absolutely did.
You know, all of a sudden, his agent, who I believe was Scott Boras, could say, hey, look, he's a Gold Glove caliber center fielder who can hit 30 home runs and steal 50 bases. You can't find that anywhere else. And yeah, the Yankees bit on it. But even his first season with the Yankees, 16 home runs, which is kind of, I think, where Ellsbury's power should be, especially at Yankee Stadium. You know, in that Brett Gardner range, 15 to 20 home runs, I think, is realistic for him. But he hit 7 last year and only has 1 this year. Where the hell is his power?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, you can't put past anything these days with these guys. So, I mean, look at freaking D. Gordon. I know we're going to talk about him and him getting popped. You know, it's these guys are using it. They're not bulking up anymore. That's what's so sneaky. Like a lot of these new supplements or drugs or whatever they're using, not all of them are for bulk. They're not like, you're not going to look like Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds when you're using this stuff. It's helping you with like fast twitch muscles. It's helping you stay healthy. It's helping, you know, energy in your muscles. It's helping so many different things now that you can't see, and that's what's so deceiving, I think, with these. It's almost like a new age of steroid guys, you know. So I don't know. It's definitely a suspect. It's got a little Brady Anderson inflation in there. So one could definitely turn an eye on that one.
Yeah, I want to see him up in the 15 home run range. I think that's where he's most dangerous as an offensive player, and at Yankee Stadium, that's totally doable. All right, Tuesday in Texas, they got blowed out 10-1. Severino pitched like crap again. It was his worst outing of the season. Unlike Eovaldi, he could not get his off-speed stuff down. Everything was up in the zone. The Texas hitters teed off on him. It was like batting practice. Do you think it's time for the Yankees to send Severino down and have him work on some stuff in Scranton?
I don't even know how to answer this. No, I think he needs to be in the major leagues. I think he's a major league baseball. He's a major league caliber pitcher. He's not showing it right now. He's struggling. I don't know why he's struggling so much, because it's not like these guys have seen the tape on him and they're hitting him at his best. You know, he's just not pitching well right now. He's not locating.
Right.
And that's not what he was doing. So I don't think sending down. I mean, I don't know what that's going to do, in all honesty.
Well,
I think he could
get some confidence, and he could work on his off-speed stuff. The team now, you're in a place where you can't keep running a guy out there who's giving up 6 runs in 4 innings and keep losing
games. I'm just wondering who you're going to put out there.
Nova.
Who's the better option? Okay, so fine. Is Ivan Nova a better option than Severino right now?
I don't know. I think he is. Severino is pitching like crap.
I mean, and Ivan Nova will have to get stretched out, so he'll have to take some time for that to happen. And I don't know. I don't think it's a feasible situation for them right now. I don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, listening to the broadcast, just listening to Cone talking about Severino too, that, and we've talked about this, the changeup, he's not using it at all. Like, it's not even part of his
system. I haven't seen it all year, and I know he threw it last year.
I don't know why he's not at a comfort level with that pitch, because it's the same thing with Pineda. Pineda's doing the exact same type of thing. They're not using the changeup that could, to me, really, really make their pitches a lot more effective. And, you know, the off-speed stuff that they are using, they're leaving up in the zone. So I don't know if this is just a feel thing he's finding in his bullpen work in between starts. I don't know what it is, but something's got to change definitely for him. And you know, I think one good start can really bounce him back. I mean, I think that's all he really needs, because he's definitely got it. I'm not worried about him as a pitcher long term.
No, neither am I, but I think that he could benefit from a trip down to the minors, more than just keep running them out there trying to figure out at the major league level. If at anything, just to see if you can get some wins strung together, because every starter is struggling right now. So you can't, there's no consistency from the rotation to the bullpen to the offense. So I just feel like you got to do something different.
There are so many compounding issues with this team right
that's
now.
Why I don't even know where to start. It's not like I can't even get mad at one specific thing other than Chase Headley, who sucks. Hashtag Chase Headley sucks.
That's the thing. Like, to me, this is a problem that's probably not the biggest problem. And I don't
it's
know
a if, problem though.
But I don't know if there's a solution for it right now besides keep running him out and getting him working him through it. You know,
he's facing Baltimore on Monday night. They can mash.
So. Nova against that Baltimore lineup too. If it doesn't give me any more, I have more promise that Severino's going to come out of it than another guy coming in there and pitching well. In all honesty, all
right, I can buy that. CC looked good though in Texas. The big fella.
CC's our second best pitcher.
Yeah, I mean he gave up
third best pitcher after Eovaldi's start.
He gave up 3 runs in 6 innings, but it actually could have been a lot better. Because he made 2 mistakes in this game. The first was in the second inning. It was second and third and 1 out. And it was a dribbler back to CeCe. And he kind of looked the runner back at third. But he didn't even turn his head fully. He gave a little glance and then threw it to first. The runner ended up scoring. That's a mental mistake. You have to fully look the runner back. So he takes a step back to third base. And then you throw it to first base. So that's a run that should not have scored for Texas. That was his first mistake. Then his next one was in the third inning with a guy on second and 2 outs and Adrian Beltre up.
Right.
And a struggling Prince Fielder up who's a lefty. You absolutely have to pitch around Beltre there and not let him beat you. And he ended up giving up a single. So 2 runs right there in my mind, at least 1, but maybe 2, that could have been prevented.
But this is do you see the problem here? It's like these guys have to be absolutely perfect. There's no room for error. It's unbelievable how you know, in the third inning, you're pitching around a guy. I mean, I guess you have to know where your offense is doing at that
point,
right?
That's an easy pitch around, though. Beltre's a right-handed hitter. He's their best hitter. With Prince Fielder, who's batting under 200 on deck. That's an easy pitch around.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You're right. It's a call. So, yeah, it's a call that needs to happen, either CC or you know, the catcher, or even Rothschild or Girardi needs to call something.
I don't blame Girardi. If you're CC Sabathia and Brian McCann, or you know what was actually was Romine catching? I can't remember. Whoever it is, I'm not saying you intentionally walk him, but you don't give him anything to hit. You either let him beat himself or he walks. Right. And that's a pitcher catcher thing that needs to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. That makes all the sense in the world.
And then the ninth inning, the Yankees had a shot. So Hicks was on second. He pinch ran. He was on second. There were 2 outs. Castro was up and Headley was on deck. So immediately what I thought was going to happen is they were going to walk Castro. But what they actually did is what CeCe should have done with Beltre. And they gave Castro a bunch of sliders in the dirt. And Castro was not selective at all. He swung at all of them and he ended up getting out. I think he flew out. And, you know, maybe if you're Castro, you're thinking, Chase Headley stinks. He's on deck. I need to get a hit. So, you know, I'm going to swing. But you have to know that you can't be swinging at sliders in the dirt there in that situation.
Or he's thinking that I have a better opportunity to hit a slider in the dirt than Chase Headley does a 93-mile-an-hour fastball down the center of the plate.
And you know what? I wouldn't disagree with that. But but maybe if it was first and second with 2 outs, Girardi might have the stones to pinch hit for Headley.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Castro making that call on his own. He's like, this is on me. I gotta do this. I don't care where the pitch is. But yeah, that's a situation where you gotta know what's going on.
Which is more definitely for a reason why you can't have automatic out Chase Headley in the lineup every night. It affects more than just when he's batting.
Compounding effects everywhere.
Friday in Boston, we already talked about the Beltran double play that kind of set the tone for the whole night. But, you know, Headley was also up. He was up with 1 out and a guy on third. Castro was on third who got a triple, but maybe could have had an inside the park home run if he didn't dog it out of the box. But regardless, he was on third base with 1 out. Headley, broken bat, pop fly to left field. They sent the runner because, you know, the team can't hit with runners in scoring position. I actually agreed with sending the runner. You make the guy throw a perfect throw, and he did throw a perfect throw. Got Castro out at home. So, you know, another failed attempt to get a runner in from third base. You know, same shit, different day. What do we say at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a run you got to get into. I mean, you have 2 runs on the board, and
would have made it 3-0.
Would have made it 3-0, which is a different game.
Would have made it 3-0 with your ace.
That's like scoring 13 runs for this team. Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, that's not a walk and a shot. You know what I mean? That's two guys on and a shot. That's a different story. So the fact that they couldn't get that run across was, and you know, there were people talking about the fact that Kessler should have been sent also on the inside or when.
Not with one out.
But there were. But you got to get that run in. One way or another, you got to get that run in. And I would have sent him too. There's no doubt. With the struggles that have been happening, it's a huge run, and you have a chance to do it. But the fact that there was a negative output speed. What is it? The
exit velocity.
Exit velocity. Thank you. The negative exit velocity off of Chase Headley's bat affected the throw.
Did you see the thing I retweeted? I talked about on Twitter the exit velocity of Chase Headley's bat, and somebody sent me a screenshot from Fangraphs that Chase Headley had a 42 mile per hour exit velocity on one of his hits, which I think is like a bunt. Because if a pitch is coming in at 90 miles an hour and it only goes out at 42, that's pretty ridiculous.
Was it on that fly ball?
No. It was from a game in Texas. From a game in Texas. But yeah. If you fully swing at a ball and it can only come off your bat at 42 miles an hour, god damn. Yeah,
and he's just not squaring the ball up. I mean, you could see it on that pop fly. He broke the bat. I mean, it was obviously bad contact. He's hitting the ball at the end of the bat, and you're not going to get anything on that. So he's not squaring the ball up. He's not using the barrel of his bat, which is the most important part of your bat. He's not using it. So I don't know what to tell you. But use the barrel of your bat. It's there for a reason.
Maybe he doesn't know that.
Maybe someone should tell him. Maybe someone should put like a big target on there and say, "Hit here."
It looks like
so he could look at it.
It looks like he's swinging a bat that's like 15 pounds too heavy for him.
So let's give him a 26-ounce bat like some of like the old guys using softball. We'll put a big target on the barrel so he knows that that's the spot. So the eye and the ball, you know, can kind of meet at the same place. Maybe that'll help. Maybe Louisville can custom make a bat with a target on it somehow.
What they need to do is the clubhouse guys need to secretly cork his bat and not tell him. So then one of two things will happen. One, he starts hitting and it's great. Yeah. Or two, he gets caught and suspended. It's a win-win situation for the Yankees. Okay, so Tanaka was actually pitching pretty good on Friday night. He was pitching a shutout into the sixth inning, which is 100% what they needed him to do. But he was tiring. There were signs of him getting tired as we were going into the seventh inning. So I want to do a little second guessing of Girardi here, where you know the team is struggling. You need this win badly to set the tone in Fenway that you're going to take 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox. If there was ever a game to stretch Betances and Miller to 8 or 9 outs, I think this was it. But he stuck with Tanaka, who ended up giving up the 2-run double to Bradley off the wall, or to left field. And it was a tie game. The momentum totally shifted to the Red Sox. And, you know, it was all Red Sox from there on into Saturday as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, when you're looking at the game and the situations, Girardi didn't even need that many outs. I mean, he needed, 7 outs. He needed to – Betances was warmed up, ready to go after Tanaka struck out the catcher, Hannigan. And to me, that was the point. I mean, you could look at it two ways, I guess. You could say, yeah, he just struck a guy out. Let's see him get one more. But in my opinion, like, their catcher is not a major league – major league caliber hitter. He's a triple A hitter, you know. So that's not the most telling at bat to me. You could tell that he was tired. Betances is ready to go. How about we bring in Betances to get that final out, to get, you know, 4 outs and move forward? But no, that didn't happen. And he gave up a double to tie the game. And you're right, it was a huge, huge point in the game, and the momentum completely shifted.
Yeah, and you can argue that, hey, Betances didn't pitch great either, because he ended up giving a 2-run bomb to Ortiz. And you're right, he didn't. But I still think if Girardi made that move in the seventh inning, it's a different ball game. And I want to second guess why Castro tried to barehand that soft liner up the middle in the eighth inning. You know, do you recall that play?
Yeah, I do.
What was he doing?
It almost looked like he overran the ball and then he tried to barehand it, or like he was about to overrun the ball. I don't know. I don't know if he thought he didn't have enough time. I don't know what was going on there. It would have been a tough play either way. Even if he gloved it, I think it would have been a tough play, and I'm not sure he would have gotten an out.
I don't either. But
I don't know why he did that. It was strange.
Yeah. So they lost the game on Saturday, and then on Friday. Saturday was a complete mess. 8-0 loss. Somehow Porcello has turned into Cy Young this year. He was terrible last year, and now he's making all this money, $18 million, and he's pitching up to what his actual salary is saying. Now on the season, he's 5-0 with a 2.76 ERA and a whip under 1, which is the most amazing stat because he's always been a contact ground ball pitcher, gives up a lot of hits, but, you know, he's pitching fantastic. He shut the Yankees down. Pineda struggled in the first couple innings, threw a ton of pitches, and I think that was really the story of Pineda.
I mean, Pineda's first inning was awful. He was battling through it. I think he threw 30 pitches. He got to a point where he had two outs, and then he just couldn't close the inning out. And it's time after time we're seeing this. So, I mean, while he didn't pitch terribly, his pitch count was too high. And it's strange because Pineda's MO has always been his command. I mean, he's never been a guy who's walked a lot of guys, gotten too, you know, deep into counts. And for some reason, we're not seeing that this year. We're seeing a guy who does have actually shaky command and not able to put guys away. So it's very off of his you know, normal demeanor, which is strange. But he battled through it. To give him some credit, he did not have his best stuff, and he did battle through it. What, 5 runs while his pitch count was up? Five innings, 2 runs. You know, he made the best of it, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. The command thing is a little disconcerting because that's not his style at all.
Yeah, he gave up a bloop double to Mookie Betts, had the car dealership waving arms going, so that was fun. but with this offense, 2 runs, you can't do that. So the Yankees lost. They got shut out. And now Sunday, the game just started. The Yankees, Ellsbury led off with a double, I see, and then Gardner bunted him over, and A-Rod hit a chopper to third base. Ellsbury tried to score, and he was thrown out at home. Where we left off, Jesus. I guess, as we're going here. Teixeira's up right now against Price. And it's absolutely monsooning in Boston. It's ugly. So, you know, it could be a long night for the Yankees and Red Sox.
Maybe that's what we need. We need the weather to come in and be the great equalizer.
Except, I know it's awful. Somehow I feel like it's not going to benefit the Yankees. They go to Baltimore for 3 games. Baltimore's tied with the Red Sox in the division at a 14-10 record. Manny Machado and Nolan Reimold are both hitting really well for them. So if you're Severino going into Baltimore, you can't let those guys beat you. But that whole lineup top to bottom is pretty good.
Yeah, Severino needs to wake up and wake up fast because, like I was talking earlier, I know this series was an important series against Boston, but because of the outcome of this series, even if we win tonight, it is ever more important that we have a strong showing in Baltimore. So, yeah, the Severino start to set the tone for that is a big deal, really, this early in the season.
We're now May 1st. I mean, it's no longer – you can't keep saying it's super early in the season. We are through a month of games. We are a sixth of the way through the schedule. So they're going to have to start winning games. They need to start winning series or else they're going to be a last-place team this year. So they got 3 versus Baltimore and then 3 at home versus Boston. Quick turnaround against Boston. So we'll see how it goes. These are important AL East matchups. You can't lose a bunch of games to your division rivals and expect to win the division.
Not when you're 5 games out starting. Right. You can't do that.
Dug yourself this deep of a hole. You gotta start climbing your way out of it. And it needs to start tonight versus the Red Sox and tomorrow versus Monday night versus Baltimore. Okay, so more bad news for the Yankees is that James Caprellian was placed in the DL with elbow. I think they called it soreness. And this was a few days ago that this happened. Everyone's freaking out. You know, who knows where this is going to go? Elbow, obviously, Tommy John. They haven't said anything like that at this point. But he was having a great start this year down in single A. He was expected to move through the system pretty quickly, get up to Trenton this year. Outside shot at making it to AAA or even higher this year. I think, you know, that's very, very slim chance of that happening. But you're looking at 2017, Caprellian could make a case to be on the Yankees roster. But maybe this sets him back a little bit.
This is what I was afraid of ever since we drafted him. I don't know if you remember, but I put it when we drafted him and I was doing just for some research on him, I pulled up, he's got that inverted W.
Strasburg,
but I think I actually brought up, Mark Pryor, who's even more of a distinct, you know, arms up, elbows above the shoulders type of situation where it's just, I mean, you look at guys who have elbow injuries and constant elbow injuries that were a lot of them were career enders. A lot of these guys throw that way. When that elbow starts consistently going above the shoulder, there's a hell of a lot more torque on the elbow And it's just not sustainable over for a long career. There are very few guys that have done it for a long career. And he's one of those guys that has that motion that scares the hell out of me for a pitcher that I'm going to get excited about. And we're seeing now elbow inflammation, not a good sign. So I don't know. Hopefully it's something. It's just a little flare of tendonitis or whatnot. But I'm really hoping it's not something that stays with him. But again, just the way he throws, he's definitely more susceptible than other guys that have more sound mechanics.
If he does end up needing Tommy John surgery, at least it's happening now and not in a couple years when the Yankees really need him.
The problem with guys that throw like that, though, is it'll help you for a little while. These are guys that get multiple surgeries because it just keeps happening. So hopefully, I'm not saying that this is him because everybody's different, obviously, and can handle different motions better than some. But it's very concerning for me.
Yeah. So you teased it earlier, the D. Gordon news, that he's busted for PEDs, and he's not a typical steroid-looking guy. I mean, he's a skinny singles hitter, stolen base guy, leadoff hitter, but he was busted, and I guess that's the Barry Bonds effect. A lot of memes going around the internet of Barry Bonds having his way with D. Gordon. It's really, if you're Barry Bonds, that's the last thing you wanted to have happen to one of your good players, is
seriously
busted for steroids. But an interesting thing about this is that Peter Gammon sneaky tweeted that some execs told Gordon was one of a few names on a list and there could be more names out next week. Hope not, but nothing surprises. So we have another steroid scandal on our hands where a couple more guys could drop, and who knows.
This has happened, though. We've heard that there were going to be names dropped from other lists, and they just never show up. So the only name I want to see out there in public that's like in black and white is David Ortiz. That's the only one I want to see.
Now, he'll still get a pass somehow, though.
The rest of them, I hope these guys are, I don't want to see any more lists.
Imagine if Chase Headley is on that list.
Well, that would make your day. It would make things a lot easier, I think.
It would change everything I ever thought about steroids.
That's true, right? Exit velocity while on steroids.
Maybe he's doing the wrong kind of effect. Maybe he's getting some weird substance that actually decreases muscle mass, and that's why. maybe that's the answer. That would actually be amazing.
It's like the antidote.
Yeah, he's taking the anti-steroid. Maybe. All right, we got some mailbags. Thanks everyone for submitting mailbags. We're starting to get a good number each week, which I love. So I'll kick it off. I know you carried the mailbag reading ship last week, so I'll help you out this week.
Yeah, you gave me the novel.
First one comes from Lee Jones. Hey guys, recently discovered the pod and think it's great. Invaluable for a Yankees fan in Liverpool, England, such as myself. Well, thank you, Lee, for listening over in London. Couple guys over across the pond listening.
Yeah, they got a whole crew over there.
Yeah, Yankee fans over there getting their Yankee fix with us. I love it. He says, okay, three questions for you. One, I'll sit is frivolous. So that term, I'll sit, must be like, you know, I'll admit.
I don't understand. Yeah, I don't even understand.
That might be a British slang saying that we're not privy to, but I love it. Number one question, with Didi relatively young, do you envision Mateo being tried at third base down in the minors? And I know we mentioned this on a podcast over the winter that we talked about Mateo, but we can touch on it again. You know, in a perfect scenario, you know, you have Castro, Didi, and Mateo all on the roster, all playing in the major leagues, but that's down the line. Who knows what's going to happen? A lot can change between now and then. So I don't think the Yankees should mess with Mateo's position at this point.
No, it's so far down the line. I mean, he's in single A right now, so we don't really know what's going to happen with him. And you know, he's at least, I think, 2 years away. If they were to make the playoffs, I said before, I could see him coming up as like a special pinch runner, kind of similar to what they did with Noel this past year. But no, I don't see him going to third base. To me, he doesn't resemble that. He looks like a stud shortstop. But if those three guys were there, I could see Mateo or Didi, one of the two of them, going over to second base. And Castro, just, you know, you and I talked about this when we were in Tampa. Even when you see him in person, he's a bigger dude. Kind of a similar body style to like an Adrian Beltre, and he looks like he could be a third baseman at some point in his career. He just kind of looks, kind of fits that bill.
Yeah, and he's definitely has the build and the bat for the hot corner. And he did play shortstop for his whole career up until last year, so he is familiar with the left side of the diamond. So I think that transition is actually would be pretty natural for him. You know, as natural as it could be. So I agree with you that Castro would be the guy to move over there. All right, his second question from Lee is, With both Sabathia and Nova free agents at the end of next season, do you see the Yankees offering Ivan a new deal to replace CC in the rotation?
Yeah, I don't see this happening. I think they're going to move on from Nova. I think it was very telling when they put him in the bullpen and kind of the way they're using him right now. It's strange. It's almost disrespectful to him and his contract year, because they're really putting him in a very terrible spot as far as his career and what he's going to get as far as contracts and things like that. He's not even getting an opportunity to compete. So I don't know. I have a feeling there's bad blood on Nova's side as well, and he's not going to want to even stay here if they were to offer him something. I can't imagine them, you know, really stretching for a contract for Nova either.
Yeah, and it's not like they're, you know, at least they're not in love with Nova as far as being a starter, as we can clearly see. All right, third question. In your opinion, is there anybody in baseball today that the Yankees would waive the clean-shaven rule for if it was a deal breaker?
No, it's because there's nobody there. Nobody in baseball right now that would break a lucrative deal for the New York Yankees because of that. It would be the most ridiculous thing in the entire world, and it would never happen.
Well, David Price said he wouldn't go to the Yankees because of their clean-shaven rule.
That's fine. We're not going to waive it for him. I don't want him.
Yeah, I mean, the rule is kind of stupid.
And I don't even believe that either. Do you believe that? I don't. I think if the Yankees gave him the biggest contract, he'd go to the Yankees and shave every day.
Probably. But don't you think it's a dumb rule?
It's whatever. I kind of like it because it's ours. It's something that's...
Yeah, but it's so stuck up, outdated.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm just so used to it.
I have a beard. I rock a beard.
Yeah, but you don't play for the Yankees.
I wish I did.
But you'd shave your damn beard if you played for the Yankees.
I'd shave my entire body.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Stop.
All right, appreciate the questions, Lee. All right, what do we got next?
This is from Derek at @Carrod_Derek, which is backwards forwards. I like it. I just realized that as I was reading it. Assuming all is right in the world in 2019 and Bryce Harper joins the Evil Empire, what will the outfield look like? Would it be Harper in right because of his arm and Judge in left for his athleticism? Or would they slide Jacoby to left and have Bryce slash Judge in center? At what point? Oh, there's a second part of this question. So let me handle this real quick and then you can get in on it. I appreciate the question, but I cannot think about 2019 right now with Bryce Harper potentially coming to this team. There are so many articles, and we've been guilty because we've written at least two or three of them, about Bryce Harper joining the team in 2019. And, you know, guys on our team want to write about it, so, you know, they write about it.
Well, we do employ a Bryce Harper stalker.
That is true. He does live in D.C. and literally stalks Bryce Harper. But I just can't think that far down the line. It's just – it's not a realistic thing for me because it's so far away. So I don't know. I there's so many things in baseball that can change until then. And, you know, I have no idea what will happen. So I really have nothing for you on that one. I don't think they're going to move Judge out of right field, though. I think Judge is the one guy that we know will we have as a right fielder, and I think they're going to keep him in that position.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add. So let's get into Derek's second part of the question.
So the second part of the question is, at what point do you see the Yankees flipping Ref Snyder, Cosma, Ben Gamel, Heathcott, and Gary Sanchez for a player like Colorado's Ryan McMahon, whose path to the bigs is blocked by Arenado? Okay. Well, you want to go first?
Yeah, so first of all, I don't know if he's saying flip all of those guys for McMahon, who... I got to be honest, I'd never heard that name before. I'd never heard Ryan McMahon's name. I'm not really familiar with the Rockies minor league system. I don't know about you. But
well, the problem with like us is that we're so focused on the Yankees and everything, little details about the Yankees. I have very little bandwidth to like go into other teams right now. And then, you know, like actually know who their minor league players are. So I just don't have much knowledge about this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I looked him up a little bit, and he is an infield prospect. I think he's a third base prospect, and obviously Arenado's a third base, but he's only in double A. So, I mean, I don't know where he ranks on the overall Major League Baseball prospect. Maybe he's high, and I just am stupid and don't know it. But I think Derek was saying, you know, will they trade any of those guys? Ref Snyder, Cosma, Gamel, Heathcott, Sanchez. And, you know, I don't think Gary Sanchez is going to get traded. I think I really do think he is going to be the Yankees starting catcher at some point in the next 2 years. So I know they have Brian McCann, but I really think Sanchez could slot in there and be the starting catcher. They're not going to trade that. He's really developing into a nice player. The rest of those players are all expendable. Ref Snyder, I don't know how many times we can talk about Ref Snyder. he's got no value anymore. At this point, they're going to either let his contract expire or they're going to have to trade him for peanuts. You know, Cosma's a nice player. Ben Gamel, I think that, you know, what would you get for him? You know, same with Heathcott. That's sort of all those guys would need to be tacked on to a high prospect like Sanchez, but I don't think they would trade Sanchez because of the value he has at the catcher position.
Yeah, again, I think I agree with you. The fact that Sanchez is probably the one guy in there they wouldn't get rid of. I think they would get rid of every single. I mean, Cosma has zero value. Heathcott's almost become zero value. Gamble's a nice player, but you know, he doesn't have major value in a trade market, right? He would be a piece. I actually have a feeling his question was more about packaging all of these guys. And you don't have enough excitement in that list. You know, Sanchez would be the guy, I guess, that would be the excitement for the Rockies. But you know, if this McMahon kid's a stud third baseman, I have a feeling it would take even more than that actually to get a guy like that. So while I would love a young third baseman to come up out of somewhere and us get him, you know, trading youth for youth, I'm all for trading a lot of youth for a stud youth. That's a cool trade with me. That's all good. I just don't know. It sounds like a fantasy football trade to me.
Yeah, teams don't do that. You don't trade a really good youth for a lot of solid youth.
I mean, that is my strategy in fantasy football. I just like throw more players at one and see if they're dumb enough to accept
more,
it.
More is better than one in fantasy football.
Exactly.
This is not fantasy football, though.
Right. Okay, next one is from Nate.
All right, so Nate says, today is May 1st, May Day. In your opinion, who besides Headley needs to be jettisoned to right the ship? So, obviously, we mentioned Headley at the beginning of this podcast that he needs to be benched. I know he's not benched on Sunday, but he does need to be benched. But I'll let you take this first. Who else would you see either sent down, got cut, you know, released, whatever?
You know, I want to see Rob Refsnyder on this team. I think that he has he's a guy that we know hits for average and could be someone that could be playing, if not every day, he has a position or he has a role that he could play. And offensively, I think they need to do as whatever they can right now to spark this team. And he's a guy that has flexibility defensively where you can put him in. You know, he hits for average. He can hit on the major league level. And I think a right-handed bat. We've seen how many lefties this year? I saw, I think 50% of the starters that we've seen have been lefties.
It was eight out of 10 games.
Yeah, well, recently, I think if you look at the whole season, recently it's been a hell of a lot. So more right-handed bats that can hit for average, to me, is a very good thing. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about this. It's I'm killing the horse right now that's been shot 15 times. I want to see him up. It's not going to happen. But
especially,
you know,
not at third base.
There's not very many other moves you can make, in all honesty. They're pretty locked
in. And that's the annoying thing. I was thinking about
this question.
Yeah,
they're pretty
locked in. It's, you know, go think about the guys who are struggling. Teixeira is struggling. Well, he's not going anywhere. You certainly don't have anybody to back up first base that's better than Teixeira.
Right.
You know, the middle of the infield is playing fine. They're not going anywhere. Beltran had a hot couple of weeks, and now he's cold. Maybe if he really starts to tank, you could get some clamoring for Judge to come up here, but we're not even close to that being a situation.
No.
A bunch of the bullpen arms that aren't pitching great, like Kirby Yates, and I know Barbado has now struggled those last couple outings. Is that really going to make a difference in the team? I said maybe send down Severino to get him his mind cleared. You disagree with that, but you know, maybe you could look at changing up some guys in the rotation like Pineda or Severino who are really, really killing this team.
Yeah, and don't forget we have Chapman coming back too in a week, really, and he's going to take one of those guys' spots, those roster spots, is the bullpen. So the bullpen will almost be untouchable as well. And there, yeah, Severino would be a guy if you were to think about that. But again, then you're losing another bullpen arm with Nova coming out of there, so you'd have to bring somebody up. So I just don't know where it is. I don't know what the spot is.
Absolutely has to be Headley. We agree on that.
Yeah, Headley would be the guy, but it's not going to happen.
You think they need to fire Cockrell, their hitting coach?
I mean, I guess that would be a knee-jerk reaction, but I don't think he's taught him to not hit. You know what I mean? Like, I read an article how Headley was talking about how his strength is to pull the ball, and that's not the strength of Yankee Stadium, and he's trying to hit more balls to right field. You know,
wait,
I don't.
Headley said this?
Yeah, I actually just read it when we were talking.
He's a left-handed batter. He's pretty good in a pretty good pull stadium. Right.
He made comments to a guy from FanGraphs about that, actually, and talking about how he's been trying to elevate the ball more and trying to hit more opposite field to right field, how that can help him out with his slump. Or I don't know if that's put him in a slump because he's trying to do something like that. So I don't know what the hell his deal is. And maybe that is Cockrell trying to do something with Headley, tinker with Headley when he obviously can't be tinkered with. So I don't know. Yeah, Headley's the guy, though.
Let's fire
Cockrell. Why not?
Yeah, firing the hitting coach, like you said, is a knee-jerk reaction. And I don't think these guys, a lot of these veterans, are really getting anything from Cockrell that would force him to, you know, to be fired or not fired. You know, they brought in Marcus Thames as the assistant to the traveling hitting coach or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's why they're wearing cotton uniforms today. It's really, really not good. But they, you know, Thames is a guy to me when they brought him on, I thought was a real transition move. And I thought a really good move because he has a lot of great relationships with the younger guys in the farm that are being called up. He's been working with them for a while. Chase Headley just got a base hit, by the way.
Hardest ball he's hit all year.
I think that was a good move because one, they have familiarity with this guy and they've had success in the minors. So to me, that's a very good comfort move. So, I mean, you could get rid of Cockrell and just, you know, appoint Marcus Thames as the hitting coach. You know, I don't know. It's not going to change anything. These guys just need to swing the bat like they normally do. They're not hitting. That's it.
Hicks just grounded into a double play. I can't stand this team. I really can't stand this team. All right. Rick from Iowa. What do we got?
Taking a shot every time the Yankees score a run, worst drinking game ever.
Yeah, you just be sober the whole time.
Thank you, Rick.
Maybe take a shot every time they leave a guy on base.
You'd be hammered by the third inning.
Yeah,
they don't get that many guys on base either.
The game would be more interesting though.
Oh man, you just be real angry.
I got an interesting question on Twitter from Frank Madonna 01, and he says hypothetically, who do you think would the Yankees have had to give to get Donaldson 2 years ago? And I thought this was a really interesting question because if you look at that Donaldson trade from November of 2014, Billy Bean got fleeced. The Oakland A's, Toronto Blue Jays for Josh Donaldson only had to give up Franklin Barreto, who's minors, Kendall Graveman, Brett Lowry, and Sean Nolan. And they got MVP Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, Brett Lowry's not even on their team anymore. I don't know who the other guys are as far as, you know, what their outcome is. Graveman, I know, I think has a lot of, obviously these guys have potential and they're big enough prospects to get a guy like Donaldson, but you got to believe that the Yankees had prospects for a trade like that to pull off that deal. And maybe it was talked about and some of the untouchables were brought up and that's where that died. Who knows? But it's interesting to look back because definitely we had what they wanted as far as prospect.
Well, I know Oakland didn't want to pay Donaldson when that time was going to come, which is...
Oakland didn't want to pay somebody? That's weird.
Oakland, that's what Oakland always does. But they didn't get prospects from Toronto. Brett Lowry was a established major league player and a very average one at that. So I was taking a look at the 2014 roster, and we do have to mention that Headley was already on the team at that point. So they already traded Solarte for Headley. So they locked up Headley in that offseason, so it's kind of like a moot point, but let's play it anyway. You know, from this Major League roster, there's not a ton of guys that they could have traded. You know, maybe John Ryan Murphy would have been a guy that would have interested Oakland, or perhaps Brett Gardner. I know he was locked up for not a lot of money. Could have enticed them, plus a Ref Snyder or something like that. Maybe you could have gotten the deal done.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's all hypothetical at this point, but it seems like, I mean, Brett Lowry was the only major league. The other guys were prospects, so the other guys were ready to go. I mean, this Graveman kid's 25 years old, so he was obviously coming up, and they were looking for pitching. But I don't know, it's a bad deal, man. There's no two ways to talk about it. It was a horrible deal for Oakland, and the Blue Jays absolutely just that one will go down. I mean, I guess it's a better deal than the Blue Jays made for R.A. Dickey, so he had to come back and make another deal. Because they could have had Syndergaard right now.
I know. That'd be scary, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so the last mailbag is actually a voicemail, so let's give that a listen right now.
Hey, guys. My name is Greg. I'm from New York. I figured I'd give a call and ask you guys a little hypothetical. One thing I've been wondering about, let's say A-Rod goes on the DL and Hicks comes back and he's healthy, and let's say that Nick Swisher does come up. Now, if he's playing well, you know, not superstar level or anything, but if he's playing well and A-Rod comes back and he's healthy, you know, what's the move? You know, do they wave Ackley? Do they keep Swisher up there and make another move? Do they send Swisher back down? It's just something I've been wondering. I want to see what your guys' outlook is. I love the show. I've been listening for probably about 6 weeks or so during the off season and during the regular season so far. And you guys are doing a great job. Keep it up. Thanks.
All right, Greg from New York, thanks a lot for the call. Really appreciate the voicemail. I know we definitely want to get a lot of those back into the show. So he's got, you know, a roster question here. If hypothetically A-Rod goes on the DL, Scott, what do you think?
So, yeah, I think the fact that if Swisher were to come up and start hitting and he's being productive at that point with it, with if A-Rod came back healthy and they had to make a move, you suggested Ackley or, you know, what would they do at that point? And to me, that is the guy. I think Ackley, I think if Swisher is proving valuable as a defensive backup first baseman and he's hitting, then at that point, because one, A-Rod's not on the DL right now. So this is a little bit further into the future.
Yeah, and this question may have come in when we didn't know about that oblique.
Well, yeah, it recently came in this week. But the thing is that we're at a point where we really need to make some moves here. And you can't get rid of a guy who's hitting the ball. And a guy like Swisher, if he's hitting the ball, is one, we know how he is in the clubhouse. I just don't see how they could get rid of him if that were to happen. I think they would have to make a different corresponding move. So I actually think that Swisher would stay on the team at that point, and Ackley would be a guy that would be. I mean, Ackley hasn't done anything. You know, he hasn't really been in a position to have done anything. Yeah, I understand. But that kind of talks about his value almost. You know, it's on this team that's struggling this badly, he barely has gotten any moves. Any look. So I don't know what that says. If that's just Girardi being stubborn Girardi and sticking with his guys and not trying to spark an offense in any way, which is frustrating. It's something against Ackley.
Well, no, I think like we said earlier, they faced a ton of left-handed starters. He's a left-handed bat. He's not great defensively anywhere on the field. So why are you going to play him? Which I totally understand. It's not like I think they're really missing out with Ackley, you know, remaining on the bench. He can't play third, unfortunately. So for everyone thinking maybe he could take Headley's spot, he cannot play third base.
The real question really would be Swisher, if he would stay or go at that point.
If it, like you said, whoever's hitting stays on the roster. You can't be taking guys off who are hitting the ball. So, Greg, again, thank you. That number, if you do want to give it a call, is 646-480-0342. And I'm giving myself a pat on the back because I actually remembered that number this time.
You actually did have to type it in first and then read it. I did see that. So,
hey, man, give me a break. So one final update, obviously, on the Yankee-Red Sox game tonight. The Sox are up 1-0. It is still pouring. It looks miserable. Evaldi's kind of struggling with his command, which you can at least give him a pass on for the weather.
He got out of that inning with one run. That was actually not bad.
So, all right, we're going to get out of here. But, Scott, any last words?
No, it just needs to change. That's it. I want to come back happy next week, please. I want the Yankees to give me something happy. And it's a big week with two more series in the AL East. So, big week.
Yep. All right, let's go. Talk to you guys next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.